listening to Tech Talk Radio, proudly sponsored by D-Link, building networks for people.
In the communications sector, there is a revolution taking place.
Look how far we've come. A third of the music released last year in this country was not even released on a CD.
Do you use a credit card online?
Oh, no. I live in Russia.
I'm concerned about the way the company's being run and the fiber to the node network.
Unless we can have clarity that we will not be subjected to further separation, we are not in a position to lodge an RFP bid.
You can't make it a technical game because the very people who are trying to protect are smarter than you.
We want to really change the world by making things so special you've got to have it.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Last Thursday, October the 22nd, 2009, Microsoft entered the next phase of its evolutionary process with the launch of its Windows 7 operating system. Still reeling from the fallout of bad press over Windows 7's predecessor Vista, Microsoft seems to be copping a bit of flack over the pricing of Windows 7, especially here in Australia, and especially the upgrade price for those keen to migrate from Vista. Australian consumers will have to fork out almost double the US price for some versions of Microsoft's Windows 7. Microsoft cited taxes, freight costs, and currency fluctuations as key reasons that the retail price for the full and upgraded version of its software was substantially higher than that in the United States, which, when you consider the Aussie dollar is near parity with the falling US currency, and traditionally Microsoft manufacture in our region, it's certainly a pill which is a bit hard to swallow. Pricing aside, Microsoft certainly have a lot riding on the back of the new OS. Tracy Fellows, Managing Director of Microsoft Australia, said the new operating system offers a streamlined user interface and significant new features that makes everyday tasks easier and allow people to get the most out of computers of all styles and sizes.
Windows 7 really changed the way small businesses work and get things done with their PCs. They'll find Windows 7 more secure, more reliable, and a longer battery life. It also provides improved desktop search, backup, and restore to help provide added security and peace of mind.
Now that Windows 7 is on the street, those users who matter the most will now be able to have their say about how good, bad, or indifferent the software is on blogs and in chat rooms globally. One of the other fracas which is dogging the Windows 7 launch is the allegedly misleading nature of Microsoft's latest TV commercial, promoting the security associated with the operating system. The advertisement in question features an elderly gentleman with what looks like to be his grandson. They're playing with a very grand toy castle and talking about IT security. During the launch question and answer session, journalist Nick Ross asked Jeff Putt, who heads up the Windows consumer team, if he thought the advertisement was a tad misleading, to which he responded by saying consumers should get more sincere guidance from a third party. He quickly added that Windows 7 is the most secure operating system Microsoft has ever produced, and now have Windows Live Security Essentials for people to download as antivirus software. On a finishing note, which may just be opportunistically coincidental, or maybe it's karma, as Microsoft launched Windows 7, Apple was putting the finishing touches on its own Windows refresh after the expensive glass facade at its flagship Sydney store was vandalised by a projectile, thought to be a ball bearing.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Recent Apple convert Adam Turner looks out the window to check out the Vista. He even catches up with Jeff Putt, who heads up the Windows consumer team to talk Windows 7 features. Optus cuts wireless broadband excess usage charges, but beware the sting in the tail. Nokia sues Apple for patent infringement, and IT guru Dr. Feelgood, also known as Dr. Sally Coburn, joins the panel. Yes, a real doctor in the studio. You may remember Sally as host of Pillow Talk, a late-night relationship program which aired on the Austereo network in the late 90s. So stay tuned to learn if she's a Mac or a PC. First up, though, here's Dr. Ron with the latest from the Tech Talk News Desk.
This is Tech Talk News.
On Tech Talk News,
what you will see in Windows 7 is that it works.
Australians say hello to Windows 7, but at a price. Nokia sues Apple for alleged iPhone patent infringements. The ACMA gears up for the national broadband network. Twitter tweets and Facebook updates will soon be indexed by search engines, and Apple contends with its own broken Windows. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Well, it's finally here. Microsoft's much-anticipated Windows 7 became available to the masses in Australia last week. 3 years after Microsoft launched the now infamous Windows Vista, the software giant is confident that Windows 7 is what PC users have been waiting for all this time. Tracy Fellows from Microsoft Australia explained.
What you will see in Windows 7 is that it works. For us, Windows 7 has been about listening to what the consumers out there have told us, the millions of people who have tested and given us feedback on the product.
But at the Australian launch party in Sydney last week, Microsoft revealed that Australian customers will be paying almost double the US price for some versions of Windows 7. Microsoft cited taxes, freight costs, and currency fluctuations as the key reasons why the retail price of its full and upgrade versions will be substantially higher than in the United States. A free upgrade of Windows 7 will be offered to those buying a Vista PC from the end of June to the end of January. The home premium version of Windows 7 is expected to cost $299, or $199 for an upgrade version. Professional is expected to cost $449, or $399 upgrade. And Ultimate is expected to cost $469, or $429 upgrade. The Sydney Morning Herald reported that a family pack being offered in the United States to cut software costs for home users will not be immediately available in Australia. The world's largest manufacturer of mobile telephones, Nokia, is taking legal action against US rival Apple for infringing 10 Nokia patents on mobile phone technology. Nokia said in a statement last week that patents cover wireless data, speech coding, security, and encryption, and are infringed by all Apple iPhones that have been shipped since the iPhone was introduced in 2007. Nokia also said that it had spent $60 billion in research and development over the past 2 decades, and that the 10 patents relate to technologies fundamental to making devices which are compatible with one or more of the GSM, UMTS, and wireless LAN standards. Apple has not been forthcoming with a statement in response to the legal action, and the actual monetary value being sought by Nokia for damages is not known. The Australian Communications and Media Authority has announced an internal overhaul to better deal with the anticipated workload that the National Broadband Network will bring. The transition to digital TV and digital radio has also provided some impetus for the reshuffle. ACMA Chairman and CEO Mr. Chris Chapman has written to the ACMA's major stakeholders outlining the new structure. Mr. Chapman said the reshuffle is designed to bring additional focus to several key tasks that presently face the ACMA. Mr. Chapman also said that the changes reflect recent federal government initiatives by allocating an appropriate new weighting to the role of the citizen, the notion of the interests of individuals as citizens, as consumers, and as audiences for content. The new divisions at the ACMA will include digital transition, communications infrastructure, digital economy, content consumer and citizen, corporate services and coordination, and the existing legal services department. A spokesman for the ACMA said that no jobs would be jeopardised by the restructure, and that a requirement for additional staffing in some areas was even anticipated. Microsoft's new Bing search engine has started indexing Twitter messages, or tweets, with plans to add Facebook statuses as well. Not to be outdone, Google announced plans to do the same with its popular search engine. Microsoft unveiled a real-time Twitter search feature last week and said it also planned to incorporate status updates from the social network Facebook into Bing. According to The Age Tech, the Twitter feature on Bing is already active and can be accessed at bing.com/Twitter. Microsoft declined to comment on the financial details of the deals with Twitter and Facebook. Bing increased its share of the US search market to 9.4% in September, up from 9.3% in August, while Google increased its share of the US search market to 64.9% in September, up from 64.6% in August, according to online tracking firm Comscore. And in a bizarre incident which coincided with Microsoft's Windows 7 launch in Sydney last week, Apple was attending to windows of a different kind. The expensive glass facade of the flagship Apple store in Sydney was vandalised by unknown offenders with some type of slingshot or glove gun. The massive 13-metre-tall, 3-metre-wide glass panels took several days to be replaced, costing in excess of $1 million. After Apple used fake shattered glass decals in some of its store windows in 2006 to promote the launch of the iPod Hi-Fi, some have suggested that the smashed window might have been a deliberate metaphorical dig at Microsoft's Windows 7 launch party. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Did you guys know that eBay in Australia celebrated its 10th birthday the other day?
So you an AAAAAAA++++ good buyer or whatever it is?
It's a big risk.
If you know the right places to buy in a shop, you can walk in and pick them up.
When I had a merchant account with the Communist Bank, the material that was for what?
That's not necessarily a good thing.
No, there's nothing wrong with my eyesight.
This is a silent number.
Hey, someone just joined the wave.
They're the people I want to avoid the calls from.
Pat Rafter's ponytail. I remember that.
It was a challenge and an opportunity, wasn't it?
I don't know. Before we got distracted beautifully by that, I was going to talk about...
This is a tad awkward, but not quite as bad as Dr. Ron's choice of music.
Sorry, it's vision impaired. It's not visually impaired, as my father-in-law reminds me. If you're vision impaired, it means you can't see. If you're visually impaired, it means you're ugly.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Yes, welcome to Tech Talk Radio for yet another night, wherever you might happen to be listening to us around this wonderful great big brown land of ours. Hello to all of our listeners in Cairns and on Switch and Brizzy. Hello to everyone in New Zealand this evening if you're listening to us. Join the chat room, chat.techtalkradio.com.au, wherever you might happen to be. Already a few people coming in there this evening, some of our regulars. So come along and say good day. I'm Andrew McComb. Sitting across in front of me this evening is Dr. Ron. Good
Hello
evening,
there.
Dr. Ron. How are you?
I'm well, Andrew. How are you doing this week?
Yeah, good, thanks. How did the launch party go for you? Did you get the Tupperware out during the course of the week and toast to the new window?
Now, my wife pointed out to me that it's actually our wedding anniversary is the same day as the launch party, so that's going to help me remember my wedding anniversary from now on, isn't it? The day that Windows 7 was launched. That's a good one.
Is that, I don't know whether that's good, bad, or otherwise, just quietly, but
it's nonetheless. Good one way, I suppose. Yeah. You've got to work out which is the better way.
So have you got your Windows 7 yet?
No, I haven't, no. What I'm going to do is buy a new PC fairly soon, sometime in the next few weeks.
You know, so over at your place on the weekend, you need to buy a new PC.
What am I using there at the moment? My normal workstation's an old Celeron or something, and it's...
Really?
Yeah, it's got a bit of memory in it.
They all had command line prompts on there. No GUIs to be seen anywhere. The ones I was looking at on the
weekend. Looking at the servers. Yeah. But on my workstation, that needs to be replaced, and I need to have Windows 7. That's right. Ben. Did you have a launch party?
No.
No?
No. I've already got it loaded on my machine, so I felt the need to have a bit of a drink over the Windows 7 was just not there, really. So, no, I moved on. Yes, didn't do much at all. October 22, came and went. Anyway, Adam Turner, our View from the Couch expert, took the couch up to the big launch in Sydney on Thursday of last week, and we're going to be hearing from him very shortly. He caught up with a lot of people from Microsoft and others about all the new gadgetry and stuff like that that's coming up. So
I was watching all the tweets coming in thick and fast while Adam was at the launch up there.
Yeah, no, it's good. I always find it amazing how you can send a person who's turned to the Mac side of the world to a Windows launch and take a bit of cynicism as you hear his voice come back and asking a few questions. Anyway, that's coming up very shortly. All right, joining us also on the panel this evening is Dr. Feelgood, Sally Coburn, who we're doing timeshare tonight. I was on her show a couple of Sundays back on 3AW. We did a bit there.
I listened to you and I watched you.
Oh, you watched the webcam.
Yeah. Was I the one? I don't know. Can you see how many people are on that webcam in your studio?
Well, I can't tell.
Oh, right. We can't talk about it tonight because we haven't got ours working. JD isn't in. He'll be coming in a bit later,
JD
hopefully.
JD is running a tad behind the eight ball this evening, but he will be in. But, Sally and I, we did a bit of timeshare with this. We're talking cyber safety on 3AW the other night with Susan McLean, who may be listening to us this evening. Susan being she pops in here regularly and talks all about those sort of things. So, here we are. Sally's in our studio. And I was just blown away the night that we were listening on the radio or talking on the radio, and I found out that Sally is a bit of an IT guru, a junkie, a tech head, not unlike us.
She's going to fit right in tonight.
I'm loving it.
Absolutely.
So loving it.
And she's brought gadgets along, she's been scouring through the handbag and she's pulled out USB sticks and she's pulled out...
Key rings, there's Blackberries, there's all sorts of stuff
And she's got a good gadget of the week for all the girls out there who might want to hear about, the most amazing bit of technological gadget for the
I was going to ask you
the lady
a gadget
folk.
This week, that's good. So
I don't actually have a gadget this week. I've
got Sally's got one for us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Too big to bring though, it's huge.
So, it's going going to be interesting. Now, the first question, or first cab off the rank, Sally, are you a Mac or a PC girl?
Well, I have to admit, Andrew, that although I had extreme pressure from my father to become a Mac girl, I succumbed to the magnificent PC.
Yes. Did you?
Sorry. Tom. Oh, that's really good.
Sorry.
There'll be hisses and boos out there.
I do apologise. I know. I'm not a purist, but I just love that right click.
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting thing with Mac, wasn't it? They had all sorts of funny things with mouses over the time, and they finally adopted it at long last. But yeah, the right click is very good. I must admit, we recently had a giveaway of pens and tablets the other day, and I was singing the virtues. I love the pen. I can't use a mouse anymore. It's all got to be right click and touch and things like that. So, which would be good. But anyway, before we get into the show proper this evening, I must talk about a few little experiences during the course of the week. Dr. Ron, you probably know, but during the I've had to buy one of these things as he holds up to the webcam, which is not here at the moment.
That was going to be my suggested gadget.
It was going to be, was it?
What have you done?
Well, I've turned to the dark side purely for research purposes.
Research and development purposes, all in the name of Tech Talk Radio.
It was funny. I sent a huge email off to Adam. Well, it wasn't huge. And Adam's a Mac guy, as you know, Adam Turner. And on the bottom of the thing, it said sent from my iPhone because I've bought a new iPhone to play around with and evaluate. And no comment about what was in the body of the email. It was predominantly, have you bought an iPhone?
is it one of the iPhone 3GS models?
It was one of the new 3GS iPhones. Now, basically, one of the things I wanted to do is go through the user experience at an Apple store.
Yep.
Which I did.
Yep.
I went up to the local one here in Doncaster over the weekend, and I had a bit of a look-see. And apart from the fact that I bumped into someone that I knew up there.
Working at the store or a customer?
No, working at the store, working on staff. He was wearing one of those little orange T-shirts. He said, I'm wearing an orange T-shirt. You need to speak to someone in a blue T-shirt. So anyway, he introduced me to a lovely girl in a blue T-shirt. And
this is in Melbourne, is it?
Yeah, in Doncaster, just not far from the Apple store here.
Yep.
Absolutely. Yep. Anyway, I went up there and I sort of said, look, this is what I want to do. And I want to be able to swap between carriers, and hence the reason for an unlocked phone, an unlocked iPhone.
Yep.
I didn't want to get one through a carrier provider, yada, yada. So the bottom line was, I said, righto, let's do this in real life. Here are two SIMs. What I want to do is put SIM 1 in, which was a Telstra SIM, and then I wanted it to actually set it all up on Telstra, which it did. It worked. You know, put it in and activated, and it did really, really well. So fantastic. Now, let's say I wanted to move to Hutchison 3.
Yep.
Put the Hutchison 3 SIM in. And that came up all right too.
The signal meter came up and you had coverage.
All worked. Yep. I said, right, that's really good. Now, that's telephony sorted. Let's go and try some web stuff because I knew web would be the trick question.
Yeah, the data will be the stumbling block.
This lovely girl assured me straight up and down the line that, yes, this is, you don't have to do anything. You don't need anything to actually go and swap between carriers and anything like that. And I thought, okay, here we go. So I put the actual Telstra SIM back in and no web. So, you're good. You promised the world to deliver.
So no data connectivity.
No data connectivity whatsoever.
Off the shelf. Okay.
Yep. Put the 3 SIM back in. Bang, it all just worked again. Put the Telstra SIM back in. No, it didn't. Anyway.
Oh, did 3 work with data off the
3
shelf?
3 worked with data off the shelf.
That's good to know.
Which was good.
So what is it that Telstra requires you to do to make it work? They obviously have extra settings.
I don't know. But we ended up going to the Genius Bar. Have you heard of the Genius Bar? It's where the geniuses hang.
Yes, I have. Yeah. Yep, the so-called experts.
That's it.
Yep.
So took a run into the Genius Bar and we sat down there and some Coke bottle wearing person, a glass person who, you know, a real true enthusiast came out from behind the walls of the Genius Bar and he said, he made a few words, one word which I can't say on radio, but he said something Telstra and tapped and said something to do with the APN, which is the access network thing. He said, they have so many different plans or whatever, it never works anyway. So, but anyway, that was my...
Did he get it going for you?
Yeah. And he said, no, it doesn't work that way. You have to enter it each and every time when you change based on the plan that you're in. So we ended up moving across to a different sort of... anyway, all too hard. We had to do it manually at the end of the day. Anyway, we got over that hurdle.
Yep.
Got over that hurdle. Now comparing horses for courses in Mac land or in iPhone land and in S60 land or the old, the phones that we traditionally have.
Mm.
One of the biggest stumbling blocks that I've found, and JD, when he gets here, we'll be able to talk to him about it.
Yep.
Is that like on with a PC or with any other phone, you can plug it into any device and it just talks. Like you can update your music, you can do this and you can do that. I've come to the conclusion the iPhone, it's restricted to just one device. So if you actually put iTunes on another machine at work and plug it in, it says, no, if you want to sync, I'm going to have to format everything and you lose all your applications if that's what you want to sync and all that sort of stuff. And I thought, oh, no.
Oh, really? This is what I worry about. You have to sell your soul to Apple and it just takes control of all of your contacts and your calendar and your mail and everything. But then you move the device from one computer to the next and then you have all these problems just replicate and they get worse and worse as you go along. I guess if you're used to using it and you're used to Apple products and you're happy working that way and you're happy with iTunes running your life, then it's okay. But
anyway, I'm just going to...
Special guest tonight. She's got a BlackBerry here.
iPhone. And she's got Talking Cat too.
I've got a Talking Cat.
That's very cool.
I'm such a software junkie. It is incredible.
We'll have to hear from the Talking Cat later.
Anyway, that was my Apple experience. Now, as we go on in life in the next few weeks, I'm going to do a few more comparisons and try and give some honest evaluations about it and see how it goes. But that's the initial sort of thing. But it's a lovely GUI. Very, very good. Oh, they do that so well.
I was
well.
Impressed with the GUI. I had a good play around with it on the weekend, I think, when you popped around. And I was impressed. It's comparable with the UI on the Android-powered phones, but the Android-powered phones are a little bit laggy. So what I mean by that is when you move your thumb around the screen or you scroll around or tap an icon, there's a little bit of a delay. It's not like an instantaneous movement or an instantaneous action. It's very good, but I would quite freely admit that the interface on the iPhone is better. It's a lot better. It's much more responsive. It's a very nice interface.
Mm.
So see how you go with it. Give it a run and we'll be interested. You haven't thrown away your older phone, obviously.
No. We're going to be using them both We'll wait till JD comes in because he's got the tricks to the trade, all those sort of good things.
Very good.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron, and Dr. Feelgood. Two doctors in. I'm feeling very like I'm in the surgery this evening.
I can get my finger out.
Absolutely.
To press the enter button.
Dr. Ron, correspondence, quickly,
I worry when
briefly.
Doctors say things like that.
Absolutely.
Lots of correspondence, Andrew. Our discussion in episode 41 with Adam Turner and Graham about passwords. Burke says, during a recent password audit, it was found that...
Password audit? What's that?
It was found that a young lady was using the following password. Mickey, Minnie, Pluto, Huey, Louie, Dewey, Donald, Goofy. When asked why such a big password, she said it had to be at least 8 characters long.
Yeah. Oh,
that's atrocious.
You're not pulling my left leg, are you, on that
one? No, that's what I got sent during the week. GD says, it's all right, I get better now. Guys, after a hardware reboot, I was able to establish a connection between my iPack and my local computer. Now, remember, GD's had problems with his iPack synchronizing before. It seems to sync everything now except for time. Prior to the hotfixes, everything was sweet. Just wondering if you guys have any problems with syncing PDAs, etc. He's probably talking about the recent daylight saving change that we encountered. GD, we haven't had any problems personally with time zones and time issues. We don't use iPacks. I don't know with the BlackBerry, Sally. How'd you go with the daylight saving change? Did you have any issues?
No, I didn't have any problems at all.
So the clock just ticked over.
Magical.
The iPhone would have been fine.
My car didn't. I was really, my microwave didn't. When are they going to tell microwaves how to do that?
Cars are very low tech. Microwaves are very low tech.
Tell me about it. Yeah. And also, do you know the hardest part about a microwave is working out how to change the clock without frying something that's not in there? Like every time I went to change the clock, I actually just turned it on.
It's a nightmare.
It is.
It's a nightmare.
These things are sent to trials.
Needs a network. Microwaves need a network port so that they can talk to an internet time server.
That would be good.
There's a thought.
If I make one of them, will you buy one?
No worries.
Okay.
I'm a gadget queen. I will buy it.
And last but not least, Matthew from Denmark says, Ron, Three have now rolled out a new network here and offer 16 megabits per second. Only in the big cities, though, you are stuck with 10 megabits per second elsewhere. And down to as low as 6 in the countryside. I'd be pretty happy with 6 megabits per second on my mobile phone.
Can I tell you,
I'm
terribly impressed because I'm sitting here actually logging on with my BlackBerry into your chat site and I just logged in.
You are not. Are you really?
That's me. That's Dr. Feelgood. That's me. I just logged in using my BlackBerry. So did you know
Fantastic.
That?
Dr. Feelgood.
That's me.
Joins the studio. Isn't that great?
I'm writing here. Look, hello.
Hello. Come and talk to us. chat.techtalkradio.com.au if you're listening live. If you're not listening live and you want to discuss anything we talk about on the show or send a message to any of the panelists, you can go to forum.techtalkradio.com.au.
It's back.
We had a web-based bulletin board, Sally, and it started coughing up blood, and then it got put into an induced coma, and then it...
Someone let the smoke out of the components, something you should never do.
It moved to a better place, so we've got a new one now, a brand spanking new forum. So if you haven't re-registered, you'll need to re-register, I'm sorry, but go to forum.techtalkradio.com.au.
Fantastic. All right. So, Let's get into it. Windows 7 got launched this week to a big brouhaha all around the place. Dr. Ron, you haven't managed to get hold of a copy yet. Will you be upgrading? Will you be buying and installing afresh and from new and all that sort of stuff? Have you had any thoughts on this one yet?
I would suggest that I will be buying a new PC. I'll be installing afresh on a brand new disk.
Yep.
With a brand new installation. I was talking in the news a little bit about the pricing. We're paying a lot more. We're paying a big premium here compared with the United States.
Yeah, I mentioned it in the opening bit too.
You did.
The bottom line is I think Microsoft were having a go at getting the disks here to Australia, which I assume they produce in Singapore in their mass replication. Also, the Aussie dollar, they were complaining about that. Well, hello, it's nearly parity. It's nearly $2.93 at the moment. Yeah. It can't be that much more different. But you know, if you're going to go out and buy the full product, let's just talk the professional line because that's the middle of the road one. There's one below and one above.
Which is probably what I'd be looking at. Is that what you'd recommend for me? A professional?
I think professional is good for anyone who wants to connect into domains and do some networking and stuff like that. The professional version is pretty good.
Yep.
I, once again, haven't had the privilege of looking at the home premium, so I'm not familiar with what's all in there. But to buy the professional off the shelf, you're looking at $449 for an operating system. And to upgrade it, which only upgrades from Vista, not from Windows XP, you're looking at $399. So it's only 50, what is it? It's $400 to $449. So it's only $50 less.
Yeah.
Really? Yeah. And you got to wonder why.
Look, Microsoft were grilled about this and they said, oh, look, there's lots of reasons. Currency fluctuations, but we've already blown that out of the water. Yeah. They also cited taxes and freight costs. Well, the mind boggles, doesn't it?
Well, it's going from Singapore back to the United States and coming back to Australia or something. I don't know.
Anyway, and they're the key reasons, they said. Taxes, freight costs, and currency.
What about giving people an electronic download option like they do for the resellers
and
for that?
Why are we concerning ourselves with freight costs in the 21st century when supposedly the world's leading software vendor is releasing a new operating system? They should be distributing it electronically.
Mm. Anyway, it's apparently what the new wonderful version of Windows 7 does. Taskbar. It's got new changes in the taskbar.
Yep.
The go-to spot for launching applications and switching windows, the taskbar has been completely redesigned to help you work smarter, cut clutter, and get more done. I must admit, I have noticed that you can actually go into documents from the taskbar, which is really quite good. What they call the start one on the left-hand side where your programs are. They've done some really nice stuff
there. Yeah, the start menu.
Yep.
Yep.
Home group, easily share your files and printers with other Windows 7 PCs in your home. Photos and videos, Windows Live Photo Gallery, Windows Live Movie Maker, a few other standard products that come shipped with the device as well. Snap, drag an open window to your screen's border and automatically resize it. But I must admit, my favourite's the shake. Have you had a shake yet?
I haven't. So you click and you shake the window. So when the window's like in restore mode.
Well, in these big sort of screen era that we're in at the moment, the big 24 inches, you can actually lose things.
Yeah.
If you have so many. Well, you just grab it on the top on the little task. What do you call it? The top bar of the thing. Give it a shake.
The title bar.
Sorry, was that Graham?
The title bar
from down the other end of the studio. Yep. The title bar. You give it a bit of a shake and it falls down. Everything else falls down. So you've only got this one window on the screen, not distracting you from any of the other things like your chats that go on and stuff like that on the other side. So.
Graham, who's also in a chat room tonight, as well as yelling at us from down the hallway, says the inability to upgrade from XP is a good feature. Users will get a much better experience by doing a clean install. I agree, Graham, definitely. Totally agree with that
because it just means it's going to force people to actually not put it on. Because I tried on this laptop here. I've migrated from Vista to Windows 7, and it took 2.5 hours to do the upgrade. Whereas when I did a fresh install, I blew this disk away and then reinstalled. It took me 30 minutes to put the operating system on, and it's just much more lean and mean.
Sally, what's your operating system of choice? Do you use XP at home?
Look, I use XP. I was a little bit uncomfortable to go to Vista because when it first came out, I thought too many bugs. I got my daughter's laptop on Vista, and she seems to be happy with it. But Andrew has just told me that I wanted to go to Windows 7, but I can't go from XP to Windows 7. What is this? Do I have to go on? Unless I want to completely reformat my hard drive, and frankly, with my 500 gig hard drive and its SATA RAID, I don't really want to. I don't know how to dismantle
it. Imagine a SATA RAID.
Yeah, don't you worry about that. You know why? Because I lost my last hard drive. Never again am I going to lose everything. Ever. ever, ever. In fact, I've got a little terabyte, a one terabyte external drive that I do a triple double whammy backup and take it with me in my pocket.
Do you? Do you use the cloud?
I'm paranoid.
Are you in a cloud yet? Do you use the
What's
cloud?
What's a cloud? Tell me about it.
The clouds are pretty much where a lot of the manufacturers, such as the Googles and the Microsofts, have all got these things out there in the so-called cloud where you back your stuff and share and collaborate.
It's all around us. It's like the Matrix.
It is. Yeah. Just have the red pill.
But someone's
going to
hack into that and kill it, I know.
That's what, like a healthy dose of cynicism as we get stuck in.
But I do like that idea because I've got that one of those. Yeah, I bought some Western Digital external hard drives that have that same sort of virtual backup thing somewhere in the ether, but I wasn't sure where the ether was.
It's out there.
Yeah, it is.
As Mulder would say, out there somewhere. It's interesting. I think a lot of cloud-based systems these days are going to start making it very compatible for sort of backing things up. I must admit, I use it for the family photographs. I do keep them on multiple backups in home, but there's nothing as good as having something far, far away.
Now, I'd just like to say that GC on the chat site has just told me, see, I am not stupid because he's just told me that my SATA may not always protect me, that I need to do backups at will. So thank you, GC. I'm glad that I'm not doing this for nothing.
Now, you've raised another good point as well, Sally. The cloud, you don't know where the cloud is. The concept is that you don't need to know. You pay for a service and the data is stored.
And if they lose it?
Stored online. Well, this is a...
What's the insurance?
Well, that's just it. You have to assess what their backup strategies are. You have to assess how the integrity of your data is going to hold up. Are you going to trust these people? And if you look at big names, you know, and you pay some money and you have a contract with them to actually provide data hosting and storage, then, yeah, maybe it's okay. Maybe it's a better solution than what any of us could actually do at home.
Yeah, and I suppose, you know, you trust the bank, don't you, to look after your jewellery in the old days.
You do.
And you wouldn't expect the bank, but it could burn down or it could get burglarised. So it's the same sort of thing. You've got to have a certain amount of trust, but I prefer to have a backup.
Think of it from the point of view that if you've got all of your data stored on your computer at home, it's all just stored on one hard disk and it's sitting in one computer in your house. But the people that you're entrusting your data to in the cloud, they might have a whole server room which is locked away somewhere safely and it's secure and that's got all your data on it. So if they have one or two or 10 computers suddenly fail, your data's still going to be okay.
No, I have no problem with that. I think it's one of those triple check things that if your data is that valuable, have it on the cloud, have it at home, and have one in your pocket as you're traveling.
Absolutely.
Yep. The size of these little external hard drives.
They're cheap as chips. $140 will get you a terabyte nearly these days. It's pretty amazing USB wise, and you can keep them in your handbag, in your briefcase, in the car,
on
in
your
the
key glove ring.
Box. Yeah,
hanging off your key ring.
Absolutely. All right. Windows 7 was launched this week. Adam Turner, our correspondent. Our regular contributor from The Age and the Sydney Morning Herald. He took his little microphone and Microsoft paid to fly him up to Sydney and did all that sort of stuff too, which is very nice of them. And so anyway, here's an Apple boy's view on the view of...
Is this the couch already or is this a pre-couch?
No, this is the couch. This is the couch tonight. Okay. So we're going to catch up with the couch.
This is exciting.
All the way to Sydney to find out about the launch of Windows 7. It was good, on a plane.
After the debacle that was Vista, it was a far more humble Microsoft that took the stage at last week's Windows 7 launch. Windows 7 is Microsoft's new all-singing, all-dancing operating system intended to replace the three-year-old Vista. After failed attempts to stamp out XP with Vista's launch, Microsoft Australia says there are no plans to discontinue Vista at this time. It will be available as long as there is customer demand. The more cynical amongst us could ask if there was ever demand for Vista. Judging by what I've seen so far of Windows 7, it seems to deliver on Microsoft's Apple-esque promise of an operating system that just works. It was a promise that Jeff Putt, Windows consumer lead of Microsoft Australia, reiterated many times at the Australian launch in Sydney. Putt was also heavy on the Vista depreciating humour and light on rhetoric, well, at least as light on rhetoric as a minion of Gozer the Gozerian can be. Whilst demonstrating the new taskbar features, which preview hidden windows, Putt remarked that it was Windows Aero made useful. Not long after, he remarked that Vista is starting to feel like a long time ago already. It's great! At one point, it actually seemed like he was going to come right out and apologise for Vista, but I guess he values his job. Putt had the crowd eating out of his hand and got a few genuine laughs rather than just polite chuckles. The P.T. Barnum of Microsoft, he gave the people what they wanted and even stood on a Sony Vaio at one point to demonstrate its sturdiness. I half expected him to juggle a few netbooks and break out into a musical number. Microsoft was keen to emphasise that it's been listening to complaints over the last few years, with Putt citing customer feedback such as, "I want my PC to help me rather than get in my way. I just want my PC to work. I just want my PC not to let me down. Only after you've got the basics right can you talk to me about new features." Putt is obviously confident that Microsoft has got the basics right this time. When pushed as to when Microsoft would release Windows 7 Service Pack 1, he claimed that this was it. He said, "Windows 7 is already more mature than Vista Service Pack 1. In other words, Windows 7 Service Pack 1 is available today." Brave words, especially considering Vista also looked brilliant until we actually got our hands on the final version. Time will tell if Microsoft can back great showmanship with a great operating system. As P.T. Barnum said, there's a sucker born every minute. While I was at the Windows 7 launch, I had a chat to Putt and to a few other people I found floating around, and here's what they had to say. So here we are, we're at the Windows 7 launch at the National Maritime Museum in Sydney. I'm here with Jeff Putt from Microsoft Australia. Jeff, if you can tell us who you are and why we're here today.
I'm the Windows Consumer Lead for Microsoft Australia, and we're here today to launch Windows 7.
So a big day for you.
Yeah, pretty big day, mate. It's been a big 6 weeks, really. We've been working through the channel, and now I'm delighted to say that we're finally goes on sale today.
So what are you hoping to get out of today? People have been playing with Windows 7 for a long time. We don't expect any major surprises.
Yeah, look, I guess the main news today is that it's on sale today. And now, outside of people like us who have used it for a little while, it means every person can go and get it today, you know, and actually finally discover what all the hype's been about.
So does that mean I could probably walk into a shop today and buy a machine with Windows 7 pre-configured on it, not just retail off the shelf?
Absolutely. Yeah. We've been working hard with our OEM partners, our PC partners, and they've been supplying all the retailers around the country. And, yeah, they're all on shelves today.
Has there anything that you've seen that your partners are doing, something that's particularly innovative or different that you're really excited about?
There's a lot of... Windows 7 seems to be driving a lot of innovation. Touch is a great new thing. I'm going to be demoing that today.
Yeah.
And multi-touch, particularly, you can see with the OEMs here today that all of them have bought new multi-touch machines to market, whether they be all-in-ones or something like Asus's netbook tablet multi-touch machine.
Yep.
Just great innovation around the product.
Yeah. I noticed that Dell have got a nice big sexy touch monitor over there.
It is a nice big sexy touch monitor, actually. I think I'd quite like to see one of those in my kitchen.
Yes.
Yeah, it looks pretty good. And once again, that's another product, you know, they've gone quite elegant in their design, and that's another product that takes advantage of the multi-touch features.
Yeah. So have you found that the OEMs have really got on board with this kind of stuff and experimenting to see what they can do with these new features?
Yeah, look, the ones that are the most obvious that require industrial design changes, like touch, are the ones that they're really going into now. But you're also seeing them take advantage of the extended battery life. So Windows 7 requires less resources than Windows Vista did, and now you're seeing machines with 8, 12 hours of battery life. That's amazing from a laptop.
Great. Well, good luck with the day.
Thanks, mate. Appreciate it.
I'm talking to Gordon Kerr from Asus at the Windows 7 launch. Gordon, if you want to tell me what your position is and what you hope to do here today.
G'day. I'm the Group Systems Product Manager at Asus Australia New Zealand. Here today showing our new Windows 7 lineup, including Touch Series, new EPC Series, and a new Unlimited UL Series.
Okay. Now, I understand that you've put Windows 7 on the T91, which is the little EPC netbook with the swivel screen that turns into a tablet. Is that right?
Definitely. Windows 7 adds additional functionality to the T91. We now have multi-touch, not just on the touchpad, but also on the main screen, which means from a user point of view, you get a much nicer interface.
Yep.
Much quicker, much smoother.
And so what are the other advantages that you've found putting Windows 7 on some of your machines?
Speed, reliability, and added functionality. In Windows 7, they've basically taken the features of Vista and they've smoothed them, improved them, and made them more stable.
So have you released any actual new products to run Windows 7, or is it more that you've taken your existing products and put Windows 7 on them?
Well, the UL series has been specifically designed for Windows 7. The UL series is a range which we've developed using Intel's UOV processor. So we've taken the UOV processor, which traditionally has been fairly low power, But then we've matched it with the battery management technology from our EPC range. We've added Windows 7 and some graphics acceleration, and we've produced a product which means that for a business user, you now get a full power machine that still gives you all-day computing.
Nice. So what do you call all-day computing?
Up to 12 hours.
Yeah, I'd call that all-day computing. Great. All right, thank you very much for your time.
My pleasure.
So here we are after a launch. I'm talking to Hugo Ortega. Hugo, tell us who you are, what you do, and why you're excited about Windows 7.
I run a company called Tegatech Australia. We've also just launched in Europe, so Tegatech Europe. Our business is involved in touch technology and mobile technology. We've been doing this for about 7 years now, so we got involved before it was a good idea. So it's fine. We're looking at Windows 7 launch and going, hey, finally the world's caught up to us. So it's an ironic twist for us that touch is a platform that is being touted as something new and fantastic. It is new and fantastic. It's new for Windows. The actual support out of the box is what's new, and that means that the user experience should be more seamless. Before, it was a whole bunch of hacks, especially with drivers and applications and third-party applications and handwritten applications. Now it's just going to work out of the box. So for us, Windows 7 is the start of something very exciting, which is the commercialization of touch.
And are there particular touch features in Windows 7 that you're excited about?
Yeah, I mean, I think the fact that we talk about human interface device drivers sitting on computers, and that's what lets them know that a touch technology exists on the computer and lets Windows understand that touch technology exists. These device drivers are now going to be buried in the box thanks to the OEM partnerships that Microsoft has created for the Windows 7 launch. As you saw today, there was 4 or 5 partners up there launching new notebooks, Dell and so on. Most of them, 75% of them, were talking about touch technologies. So for us to see the Windows experience now supported natively, that's what we're excited about most. It means that when you right-click, there will be a right-click. If you're hovering on an icon and right-clicking, there still will be a right-click. When you do a flick at the bottom of the taskbar, you can get your submenus called up. Instead of right-clicking, they just come up with a flick of a finger. The keyboard itself resizes nicely and hovers over everything, and the cursor lands where you need it to land. So there's these sort of user experiences which, as Windows 7 is touting, it just works. Well, with touch, it just works as well. Yeah, so that's what we're excited.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
And I must admit, I have to echo those sentiments. It does. It just works compared to previous versions of some of the... We had to tinker with drivers and stuff like that. So, anyway...
The man himself has just joined the chat rooms. That was a timely entrance.
Really? The man himself?
Hello, Adam. Yes.
Oh,
chat.techtalkradio.com.au.
Adam Turner is here, back from Sydney. Yes, exactly right. If you want to ask Adam some questions, come along to the chat room. Good idea there, Dr. Ron. Now, this evening on the program, we have Dr. Sally Coburn, otherwise known as Dr. Feelgood, with us this evening. We're going to talk a little bit about tech and how things have gone from, well, put it this way, Sally, you're currently on 3AW, was it 6 o'clock on a Sunday night?
Correct.
And you've been doing that for a while, but my first recollections of your radio career started back in the Pillow Talk days on Austereo.
Indeed.
Was that around about 6 years, didn't it? That was pretty revolutionary radio at its time.
Look, it was naughty radio, some people thought, but in fact, if you listen to it now, you'd realise it was very tame. And you know, the most amazing thing behind the scenes, what you don't know, is that when we started out in radio, we didn't have computers because they didn't exist in radio.
Yeah, streaming didn't happen back then, and webcams didn't happen.
No, we had reel-to-reel tape that they used to have to actually cut and splice and literally sticky tape the interviews together. It was amazing. And then we got this computer.
Yeah.
So actually, they used to stick up little post-it notes on the wall to say who was the next caller. But then they got this computer, which had no hard drive and a 5.5-inch floppy. And we used to run the whole show for years, for as long as I was there, so till 1992 to 1998, on this one computer.
What did you have the computer do when it was first introduced?
Green writing.
Yep.
On a black screen.
What was it used for
it
in the
said,
studio?
It said, Dr. Ron's on the line and he wants to talk about his itchy whatever.
Oh, it was the interface between the producers who sat outside the glass panels taking all the phone calls and who was coming up next and what they wanted to talk about. And more importantly, what button to push to put them to air, probably, what line they were on. So.
Indeed, all of that stuff. Yeah. And that was revolutionary in its day. It was like, whoa.
It's just you wouldn't even think about trying to do a program like this now or like yours now without having computer technology in the studio.
Well, I had the delight of being in the Triple M studios just the other day, and the touch screens are just magnificent, except I sort of, you know, press the wrong button, put the wrong song to air.
Oh, well, that happens. It doesn't matter whether it can be more modern or not. It can be anything. You can always put the wrong song to air.
Fortunately, it didn't actually go to air.
So if you could do what you did back then today, how would you do it differently with the technology that's currently available?
Well, back then, I actually did have an MIRC chat site. I wonder if anyone's in the room at the moment remembers the old MIRC.
Yeah, Merck. That's right.
Yep. And so it was called Hash Pillow Talk, and we used to have 40, 50, 60 people. The funniest thing I found was I went on there as Dr. Feelgood, and I kept getting these, "You are so not Dr. Feelgood. You are so not." And I'm thinking, "I so am."
were you chatting to people live while the program was going?
Yeah, we had concurrently a chat site, and we also had phone in, we had chat site, we had email in, and this was in the early 1990s. That was courtesy of the fabulous Andy Grace, who really pioneered a lot of the sort of tech talk on radio.
Yep.
At Austeria, he had Net at Night, I think it was, back
in
the...
Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
That was Andy. And he, of course, introduced me to the internet. I'll never forget walking out of Pillow Talk one night, and Andy was in the other room and said, "Come and look at this." And I said, "What is it?" He said, "It's the internet." And I went, "Say what?" Anyway, I went in there and that sort of noise of the modem.
Oh, that's an analog modem dialing up.
That was it. That was it. Do you like my modem impression?
That's good.
And then often it went... It didn't.
You do that very well.
I know. Look, so many times of sitting there waiting for it to connect. Anyway, and Andy said, and I said, "That's writing on the screen." He said, "No, they're people." And I said, "Oh, come on now." And then they said hello to me. And I thought, this is stunning. It was just a revolution. It was fantastic.
It's a bit like the first time you made an international phone call, really, wasn't it? You're sort of like, wow, that was pretty impressive. And then this internet thingy came along and you go, wow, that's pretty impressive. And now we just take it for granted, don't we?
Well, I remember the very early, I can't even remember what it was called, but the Skype predecessor, and being able to sort of talk to people all over the world. And that was just so much fun.
What did we use before Skype?
There was NetMeeting
we mucked around with for a while. Yeah,
That was an H something protocol, which was a dog of a thing to get through a firewall.
That was the predecessor to SIP, which I don't think anyone uses H.323 anymore. It was one of the first voice over IP protocols.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it?
So, and ICQ, that was pretty early on as well.
I remember ICQ.
All those instant messaging applications that emerged.
Yeah. Now we have mobile phones and all of that's sort of gone, you know, as an application on our mobile phones. We're sort of really using these things now to be out in the field and interacting, you know, via email and via web. And you get a phone call these days, and you go, "Oh, I have to talk to somebody." Anyway, that's where it's all going to. So, Dr. Feelgood, tell me a little bit about what your other computer interests are. I noticed that you, from talking to you previously, you like to get behind the engine or get under the hood of a modern computer these days and have a tinker.
Well, also I do, because and you're going to hate this, but I actually have long-haired cats, and so I have to actually open my computer from time to time to clear out
the cat hair.
And of course, it has been known to blow out the occasional power source. And I am apt to go down to my local computer store, buy a new power source, take it home, and install it myself.
I'm impressed.
I know. Look, hey, it's a girl's got to do what a girl's got to do. And
but the problem is, there's not too many girls that I know that know how to do that. So you're very much in a league of your own, I would say.
Especially for a woman over 50, would you say?
Definitely.
There you go.
Definitely.
I've got to say, the other thing I like to do is I like to unpack my or take out my little cards and put them back in various. Because I've got this really dodgy card. It's one of my video editing card, and it seems to interact with one of the other cards, and I have to keep moving it around. I don't know why. It does. It gets upset.
Dr. Ron's nodding here. Yeah.
It gets upset if it's at the bottom. It likes to be in the middle. Sort of, you know, that sounds a bit Dr.
Maybe it's a heat related issue, if that be the case.
Well,
I think this is leading into a Dr. Feelgood type conversation. We've got to be very careful here.
Potentially. Yes. But like changing out things like power supply units, if you use.
It's not difficult.
It's not. Well, if you use an element of common sense, you think, well, I'll just take some screws out. I'll open the box. I know. Remember what's connected to what. Okay, well, just unplug that, put the new one in.
Turn it off first.
Turn it off. That's a good idea. Use some common sense, and you'd have a lot of common sense as a doctor.
Well, this is what I think. I think people are unduly afraid of tech.
I think so.
I agree.
And I just don't get it. I mean, look, my 86-year-old aunt has gone ballistic with her computer now, and it's fantastic. And, you know, previously, I can't touch things like that, dear. But no, she's into it.
Absolutely. And it's really a bit of a false myth, isn't it? It's one of those things where people should get and learn a little bit about them. Obviously, you can do it on a PC-based system. It's a bit tricky with the Macs, but nonetheless, you can still plug the peripherals in and move them around and do stuff like that and get things talking, get, like, phones talking and syncing up and doing all that. It's just have a go. You can't break anything.
I'm worried that the next generation is going to actually use a computer but not understand anything about its innards. You know, they won't know what DOS was. They won't know what C prompt. I mean, it's just really sad. It's going to be it's like the microwave. I don't know how it works. I just put stuff in and press a button and it works. And the computer's going to be like that soon. They won't care.
But is that the same as us now? Like, we know how to drive a motor car. If you think 100 years ago, anyone who owned a motor car would have been able to pull it apart and reassemble it. They would have known every working part in it because
Wouldn't
they were mechanics and they that's what they did. But now we just get in it. We
start it,
we drive, and
we do.
I don't know. It might be the same. But there's a whole generation now, like you
Wouldn't it be cheaper, though, if you knew how to take that car apart and build it back together?
It would be incredible. We would have all saved ourselves a lot of money. But there's a whole generation now that are growing up that have always had the internet. They've always had this connectivity, and they don't know a world without this connectivity.
Well, a lot of them, they don't actually know, you know, anything prior to Windows. They don't remember Microsoft 3.1 or anything like that. Well, that was Windows 3.1. That was Windows. What am I talking about?
But it was the first Windows.
It was. I had it. I remember when I got it in my little beige box. It was very nice.
Did you have an IBM, one of those very original IBMs when they first came out, or did you go to a Mac? I must admit, I had a Mac when I first started.
My dad had my dad had a Mac, and my earliest memory of his Mac was playing Your Restaurant at the End of the Universe on it. And what I remember was my memory tells me it was a graphics program, but it just couldn't have been a graphics program.
I think it was a text adventure.
It was a text adventure, and but my head... thinking back, says it had, because I've read the book as well and seen the movie, as we all have, and I think, oh, that was I have to stop myself. No, it wasn't graphics.
And kids would be saying, a text adventure? What's a text adventure?
Yeah, boring.
Boring.
Zork.
I had Zork. I loved Zork.
Zork was a text adventure.
Yeah.
It was, yeah, they were the interesting days, weren't they? We've come a long way from that. In fact, I don't think you'd probably find too many text adventures these days, would you?
Yeah, I don't think so, no. No, you'd type in... the computer tells you what you're seeing or what you're looking at. It says there's a troll here and your sword's glowing blue and you type in kill troll with sword and it says, oh, yes. Bang, crash, parry with the sword.
Yes, it did.
With the troll.
Sally, did you have a games phase?
Oh, look, I did. I still do.
What? You still do?
Yeah.
What games did you start off with?
Well, I started with that one. And, of course, my moon landing in 1971 when I had my Hewlett-Packard.
Moon landing.
Wait for this. I got for my 21st birthday, I was given the Hewlett-Packard 21-step reverse polish programmable calculator with the moon landing game on it, which I played. I still have that particular machine. Don't know whether it works. Of course, you know, every girl's dream. What else did I receive for my 21st birthday? A Keylor Specialist ophthalmoscope. You too want one of those. I just know it.
A
Keylor Specialist ophthalmoscope. What is that? That is a doctor piece of equipment to look in people's eyes at the back.
I thought you were going to say something else in for a minute. That's all right.
My father gave this to me with great glee and said, Sally, this is for you for your 21st birthday. And I said, I don't want that. And Dad said, no, I'll have it. So, I had this passion for mist. I'm sorry, but I had this absolute passion for mist. Got the first one, done them all, love them. Just think that is the best ever game.
Sally, we have a question on our chat. Do you remember a Striker from IRC?
I do. I do remember Stryker from IRC.
There you go, Stryker. She remembers you.
Hello, Stryker. How are you?
You guys are obviously acquainted.
Yeah.
Stryker will attest to this. We had a fantastic time on the IRC.
How many people would come on? Like, was it?
Would have had about 30 regulars, and then there's hundreds of other people. Stryker, you can probably help me here. There was gorgeous GAWJUS. There was a whole lot of people. In fact, we had a couple of people who got married.
Really?
They met on the IRC and got married.
There you go. That's the very first internet relationship, really.
It was before Facebook.
I have to tell you, this was...
Before the Russian brides.
Well, he proposed on my show, on Pillow Talk.
Did he? Yep. Stryker did?
No, it wasn't Stryker. No,
no,
it was someone else.
Gorgeous or whoever it was.
No, it wasn't Gorgeous.
The other people.
Yeah, the other people.
Ah. I remember Myst as well, by the way.
Myst was fantastic.
Before. It was a great game. The graphics were just sensational.
I had the LucasArts one. I bought the box set of LucasArts games, which had a whole lot of stuff. But I did succumb to the Wii. I have a Wii. And I love Super Mario Galaxy. Ah, Super Mario Galaxy is brilliant.
Have you
Stop
got a
looking
Wii?
At me
you
like
need a,
that.
You need a,
I don't have any game consoles yet.
The Wii's really... You know, can I tell you what the Wii does, though, that's really, really confronting?
Breaks televisions.
You have to put your name and you have to put your weight in on the weight thing, and then it draws a little avatar of you. And mine's a really fat avatar. And then it says stuff like, you haven't been around for a while. Oh, and I've got Brain Teaser, of course, on my little green Nintendo. And Michael Kargrig, the adolescent psychologist, I caught him playing this Nintendo in an airport once. So I said, what are you doing? He said, Brain Teaser. I said, what's that? He said, keeps you smart. Oh, I'll have to have one of those. So, and he keeps saying, when you go in there to this program, he says, you haven't been here very much. What did you have for dinner? And stuff. Really confronting stuff. Then you do the Sudoku and you feel good.
It's good. You go to log onto your video game for a bit of abuse.
It's a bit that way, actually. But no, look, I think I could safely say that I got totally addicted to games. I really, really
fell
into
this. I think
we've
all been there. Dr. Ron and I used to play Warcraft. You'd sit down for half an hour and then 10 hours later, you'd still be going, oh, I've got to go to bed.
But can I tell you the thing it did for me was it taught me to touch type. doing all that sort of stuff, because I don't play the war games. I like to play the sort of thinky games. And talking on the IRC and playing games, prior to that, I couldn't type.
Mm. Do you touch type, or do you touch type very fast?
Three finger touch type.
I'm sort of six finger, so three fingers on each hand. But I don't look at the keys anymore, of course.
That's good. That's good if you can get to that stage. Mm.
But I didn't mean to. It just happened.
Mm. No, my typing evolved the same way. I don't touch type, but I type very fast with both hands.
Can I tell you what really annoyed me was when I was at school, we weren't allowed to do typing if we did science. You know, this is going back into the dark ages. They wouldn't let you learn typing if you did science.
I think at our school you couldn't do typing full stop.
If you're a boy?
Yeah.
Is it wrong?
We went to a boys' school. We went to grammar school. We went to the same one.
We don't do typing.
That's
only
right.
Girls do typing.
Correct.
But hang on, only girls who do home economics do typing. They wouldn't let me do home. They said to me, you're good at science, so you have to do German. You're not allowed to do home economics. And I said, but I want to go and do the food thing so I can eat the food, because they make apple crumble and they get to eat it.
Ah, that's the motivation for doing home ec. Well, there you go. I never knew. Hey, we're going to take a break when we come back. We're with Dr. Feelgood this evening. Sally Coburn, as you may or may not know, you can come and ask us questions, chat.techtalkradio.com.au, the forum's back and all that sort of stuff. Come and say good day. We'll be back with more after this.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Talk Radio.
Tell us about your new toy. This is
the one that occupies the room.
This is gadget of the year, this one.
I just want to click an XE and have this work.
So you've got a workaround for the Android market now for your Androids.
How long is that in viewing time?
About 84 minutes.
The only option is to buy it outright then.
It is, it really is.
Have you unplugged all the fax machines?
Yeah, go on.
I'll tell you though, that you've got to be careful doing that. Some people get very narky.
Internet villain of the year.
And the moral of the story is backup.
Backups, for goodness sake.
This is along the lines of the AFL with drug cheats, isn't it?
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, proudly sponsored by D-Link, building networks for people.
Yes, Tech Talk Radio bringing families closer together. Really? Is that what we're doing tonight, Dr. Ron?
I've had to wrestle. No, it's not.
Sally's just done a run, huh?
I've had to wrestle my netbook off our special guest.
No.
She's run out to her car in the car park to retrieve her netbook.
It's a vital piece of equipment in the studio, isn't it?
It is. She'll be back with us in a few moments. She was trying to punch out messages on her BlackBerry. It was working, but it was a bit slow. She was getting very frustrated. She started smashing her fist against my netbook. I said, hang on a minute. That's mine.
Anyway, so she'll be back in just a moment. Yes, interesting things have been happening in the world of telecommunications this week too.
Telecommunications.
Yes. Telco should compensate complainers, says the watchdog. Because you remember how the TIO have just had one of their little quarterly updates?
Yes.
Complaints are still on the rise in all sectors, predominantly for internet and mobile. Fixed lines are disappearing, apparently.
They were talking about having this legislated, potentially.
Yeah. Well, according to this, the Australian Competition and Consumer Action Network wants telcos to pay consumers $50 if their complaint of poor customer service is proven valid. Won't do a dent. I think they should go thousands. Everyone will be getting in on the act. What do you reckon? $50? Maybe just a credit to your monthly, free month or something on your bill or something. I think it'd be better. But
would $50 have suitably compensated you for your recent Telstra tale of woe?
My Telstra tale of woe? No.
No,
because it cost me, I paid probably $200 for something that didn't work for half a month, so it's $100. So,
What about your lost productivity, having to stay at home and wait for them to come out to your house?
Well, there's a thought, isn't it?
You'd accept that you would have to stay at home and wait for them in the first instance to install the service. But if you have to take time off again and again and again for them to come back and repeatedly attend to problems that they've created, it's a bit rough.
Yeah. Oh, well, wait and see. Apple, yet to upgrade boot camps for Windows 7. Does that surprise you?
Yet to upgrade boot camp.
Apple has committed to upgrading its boot camp application to support Windows 7, but it's unlikely such an upgrade will be available until the hype around the Microsoft's operating system has died down and they fix their Windows, as in Apple fixed their Windows. Boot camp is a utility that lets users run Windows and its applications from a separate disk partition on an Intel-based Mac. So there you go. If you didn't quite know what boot camp was, I think, doesn't Jada use it to boot about three operating systems concurrently on his thing?
Yeah, he can have it.
Is that what boot camp does?
No, that's not different. He's using somebody on the chat helped me. He's using one of those Mackie things that everyone knows about. I can't remember.
You can't remember?
No.
Oh, well.
One of those bootloaders.
He'll be in shortly. Hopefully we can ask him. And other interesting news, the table turns for the Australian Communication and Media Authority's online safety focus. Consumers want to take responsibility for protecting themselves online, but ISPs and governments still have an educational role to play. And this is according to ACMA. This is one of their reports recently.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
I don't know, is this the beginning of the turnaround for the Conroy filter? Are we starting to see, let's turn it around slowly? With the role of government in education was acknowledged, participants in this report raised concerns about an increasing encroachment of governments into their online sphere. Once again, slowly talking about bringing it into Conroy's filter.
Yep.
But others said that the government regulation in the area was too widespread and would lead to complacency and an abdication of self-responsibility.
Mm.
What do you do? It's an interesting thing. It's got to be, internet's got to be free and roaming, and education at a home base level, I think what we've always preached in here,
has
to really reign supreme, don't you think?
Well, I think so. It's hard to know where the government's headed at the moment with its big net filter trials.
It's been very quiet.
It's been very quiet. They haven't released any results from it. The dates have been pushed back and back and back. And, yeah, I think hopefully, if we all keep our fingers crossed, it's going to die a natural death.
Yes, thought we might have heard something around the grand final time, but no.
Yeah, well, you wait until...
I haven't had any press releases from Conroy and 5 o'clock on a Friday for a while,
actually. You wait until there's, like, yeah, that's right, large news events in mainstream media, and by the way, with the slip was in, the net filter's been canned. And then, yeah, like, everybody watch the grand final, and everyone misses all those sorts of...
What did you say, Dr.
What was that? Yeah. Welcome back to our special guest, who's now net booked up, and we've got dueling
PEPCs.
EEPCs.
And by the way, they do all the nasty health press releases at exactly the same time on Christmas Eve or grand final.
Is that what they do?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
it's the thing.
What a coincidence.
Oh, it is unbelievable.
No coincidence involved, is it?
All right. And other interesting news too, which we were talking about, Nokia could seek up to $1.1 billion for iPhone patent infringements. Now, this was a bit of a... Here we go. The CSIRO's just done wonders. They've got their 200 mil. That's a drop in the ocean compared to this one for the major manufacturers reproducing the technology to enable them to do wirelessly connect to one another. Nokia are going to go down the path towards Apple. And apparently Apple's facing the possibility of having to pay the world's top mobile phone maker plenty for the technology used in iPhone, or in all the iPhones sold so far.
Look, they haven't actually said the monetary value of the damages that is being sought, but it's not going to be insignificant, is it?
Well, they're alleging
head-to-head with Apple.
They're alleging
10
patent infringements, and they haven't really gone into detail about what patents have been infringed,
but they said they relate to wireless LAN and GSM radio technology and UMTS radio technology, which
probably
is all the 3G stuff. So
he's hoping that all the guys down at the CSIRO are listening up. They might get to go around too on the wireless. Well, but they've done their settlement on that, haven't they? So that's the end of that. So.
And all that stuff's fairly new. It's only in the last few years that Apple has delved into that. Oh, well, no, that's not true. They've had wireless in their MacBooks things for a long time, haven't they?
Absolutely.
I wonder if it's related to all of that technology or just the iPhone type technology.
Mm. Sally, why did you buy one of those RIM devices, a BlackBerry? What made you buy a BlackBerry as opposed to any other device out there on the market?
Well, the reason I did it at the time, and I actually was just at the time that the iMac came out, and the iPhone came out, I mean, and I went with it because, frankly, I liked the compression ratio, and I liked the fact that I could get a lot of emails downloaded, and all the other programs and all the other plans I saw didn't compress the emails to the same degree. So it was actually a bit of a tech thing, and that's actually why I got it.
Yeah, okay, so it wasn't really – it was really bought because you wanted email. It was a real – yeah.
That's why I got it.
That was really the buying criteria.
Yeah.
Well,
my other phone died and I needed a new phone. And I thought, well, I do a lot of travelling I do a lot of corporate speaking, so I'm around the country a lot. And so for that reason, I need to be in touch. And I've just found it stunning. And I've put it onto the, it gives me the beginning of the message, but it doesn't give me the whole. I've got the option to download more. So I'd never, ever reach my capacity.
And you're happy with it? Works all right where you need to use it?
I love it. I've dropped it a million times. It's got
robust
bashes all over it. No, I absolutely love it. And I must admit I've put a little bit too much media on it. And
too much media?
Can't have too much. You're talking to a man who creates media for a living. You can't have too much media.
Yeah, I know, but I can't help putting little animation videos that I make and silly things like that.
Oh, yeah, that's all the fun part of it, really.
I know, I love it.
But you don't get an iPhone. You can't do that on an iPhone.
No, but this hasn't got enough room to put as many as I'd like.
Now, you're using a BlackBerry, a 9000?
Bold.
Oh, beg your pardon, BlackBerry Bold. Yeah, yeah, yep. So that's a fairly recent model.
It is. It's about 12 months old, this one. I think.
That's going great guns.
It is. Look, it's fabulous. And it's the best phone I've ever had. I love the hands-free speaker option. I mean, I've got the little suction cup thing on my windscreen that I just whack the phone in.
How's it go?
I had a Bluetooth that I used to use, but frankly, my Bluetooth, I didn't like it. And I've got a convertible, so I can't use one of those ones that you put on your... what do you call it?
The roofie visor thingy.
It flies out the top of the car.
Yep.
Excuse me. So anyway, my Bluetooth wasn't working well, so I'm just using the speakerphone on my BlackBerry, and it's working a treat.
Excellent.
Do you synchronize the BlackBerry with anything?
Look, I was synchronizing it, but I love my little Outbook. What I do in Outbook is in my calendar, in my diary, I put often the emails that relate to that particular event, so I have a lot of attachments to it. That does not sync well with the battery, with the BlackBerry.
With the BlackBerry?
It doesn't like bringing across all the documents.
So you run your life off the BlackBerry, essentially?
Well, I would if I could find some way of synchronizing it, and maybe someone knows the answer to this, but if I could get the dates in the calendar without all the attachments, if there's an option to say just bring across the events, not the attachments, it'd be stunning.
Okay, so I beg your pardon. So you use your Outlook and everything.
I live off my Outlook.
Live off Outlook instead.
Sometimes I actually print out my calendar to take it with me, which is like really stupid.
No, it's not. I do that.
Print out the week?
Yeah, print out the week, and then you can keep that in the back of your diary, and you can see what you're doing at a glance.
But it was brilliant. It is brilliant to be able to synchronise your Outlook with the BlackBerry. As I say, it's my own fault for putting too many things in it.
It is one of those things, isn't it? The Outlook is a great thing to see, because I do it all the time with my appointments. It's really handy to work out what's when and how and why. And I actually sync now with Google, so I get a text message half an hour beforehand. They send me a text
to
my mobile.
It's good, isn't it?
A free text message reminder.
Yeah, I do.
I haven't seen that one.
Haven't you?
No, you can.
Google will send you a text message reminder every half hour or whatever it is beforehand to do all that sort of stuff.
The thing I want to know from you guys, though, is with Outlook, I had problems with my previous Outlook because I am a bit of an email hoarder. I've got every email I've ever received, basically.
That's good in a lot of respects, especially if you're dealing with a lot of people.
Don't you worry about that. And the thing is, my PST file, once it gets over a gig, it gets very upset.
Yes, yes.
But now on XP, I'm finding it doesn't get so upset. I think I'm up to 1.5 gig and I must do a bit of archiving. But when I archive it...
Two gigs, the magic number, watch out.
Yeah, because the PST file doesn't get smaller when I archive.
No, when you archive, it's actually writing a backup somewhere of all that data, but it's keeping everything in your existing PST. You have to then delete the things out of the PST.
So I have to export them and call them something else and then just relink them.
Yeah, and there's also a little utility which comes with the PCs called ScanTest, or I'm just trying to think what it is. I've run it a few times, and it goes through and compacts things and cleans things up and makes things a bit smaller to it as well. ScanPST or something like that, which makes things shrink down a little bit too.
A ScanPST is like a repair utility.
Yeah,
it does.
I have been known to use that.
Yeah, comes in very handy, especially when your files get really, really big and corruption takes place. And
But you know what? I've noticed a lot of people now are using those emails where they're sending you an appointment. So, do you want to come to this meeting? Press here if you want to come.
Like an accept button.
I don't like that because it doesn't go into my inbox. It goes into my calendar, and so I forget. I mean, okay, you could argue, but I often still search my inbox for things, and I find it in my calendar. But the other day, I got a reminder came up on my BlackBerry, meeting 3 o'clock. It was 10 to 3 at the time. Meeting 3 o'clock, Carlton. I went, oh, right.
That's handy because I'm in Frankston.
That's it. Yeah. I'd completely forgotten. Wasn't good.
Adam Turner on our chat saying it's basically keep them around 1 gig and back them up regularly, which is good.
You're right.
I tend to actually break down I create a lot of those little files and drag and do my housekeeping. So like I have one for this particular show and I drag all my emails from that into one and it sort of splits the load across it. So you don't have this one huge file with everything in it. You've got lots of little files. So at least you don't fall too far when things get corrupt.
But the thing that I always think too is when you...
buy a Mac, Adam. Yeah, right.
when you export your inbox, you have to remember to export your sent box as well, because you sort of have this thought, oh, it's going to back up my inbox and my sent box, but it doesn't. You have to do it all separately.
It does.
And I use my journal for a lot of...
That's going to be my next question, do you really? That's terrific.
Yeah, I put all my online receipts I put in my journal.
Good on you. That's good.
That's a good use for it, isn't it?
I used to use the journal a lot when I was in a previous job, and it was really good.
We had an application. We had, if
you can picture this, we had our telephone system, our PABX, hooked up to our Microsoft Exchange. So we had some very clever integration going on. And I had it configured so that... I'm just going to do that. If anyone's actually watching on Ustream at the moment...
Hello.
I've just started the Ustream there. So you can see Dr. Feelgood in the studio with us.
Two doctors.
Yeah, two doctors at once. I was actually able to set it up so that when my phone rang, or I made a phone call, my computer automatically opened a new journal entry straight away up on the screen. So if my phone rang, it'd say, bang, new journal entry up on the screen. Hello, it's Dr. On speaking. Oh, it's Dr. Feelgood. Hi, Dr. Feelgood. I could just start typing and That's making good. Notes about the phone call. And then if you wanted to look at notes about your phone call, you just go straight to the journal and you could see everything there.
What a great idea.
It's an underutilized part of Outlook.
It's really really good for things like, for example, if you have a bingle in your car, go home and write the notes about the bingle in your journal. It records the time that you record it, obviously, if you leave it too late. But it's good, actually. I suspect, and I don't know, but I suspect it would be more useful than having it on a piece of paper if you had to go to court over something.
Yeah, yeah. There's also a stopwatch feature that's built into the form so that actually if you can set it so it starts when you create a new journal entry, I can click on the start timer form. And if you're working in an industry like especially like the legal industry where you're wanting to bill people,
microsecond stopwatches.
Absolutely. But you could say if you had that integrated for your phone calls, you could say, oh look, I spoke to that person for 8 minutes yesterday and for 25 minutes today.
Well, let me tell you, though, about the medical profession and how we've utilised these sort of things. In fact, I one of my colleagues I worked with was one of the pioneers of Medical Director, which is our software that we use for patient records. And this is fantastic. It's revolutionised medicine. We actually write legible scripts now. You've probably seen if you go to your doctor.
Is that what's right across the country now?
More or less.
They do it all basically on the computer and you want 200 a little tube of this and they dig down into it, click the button and it comes out.
But not only that, we've got the latest version, which I'm still getting my head around, has got a place to put a photograph of the patient, which you might sort of think, oh, what's that about? But A, it's a security thing to see that you really are you. But also, when you go into the waiting room, if you haven't seen the patient for a while, you think, oh, look, I know them, but I can't remember what they look like. You can actually see the photo. It is very handy. And there's all sorts of little things on there that are just great. The recall system, that has revolutionised medicine to have recall systems integrated into the software. It's been fantastic.
Yep. That sort of revolution, I would think, had been long coming, wouldn't it? Because traditionally, I think the medical, like probably any professional organisation, paper warfare and becoming a creature of habit in a paper world would be really hard to get everyone to go, righto, let's not
Andrew,
do it that way, let's do it this way.
I have to tell you, I'm very embarrassed to say, but in the early 90s when we first went onto computerised software and it was really basic in those days, I refused. I said, there is no way I'm doing that. I'm keeping paper records because they're the only decent thing to have and you must have paper records. And I had a sort of a conscientious objector for about a year before I got onto it. And I feel so embarrassed about it because it's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. And what about the national system? Are you familiar with how they're going to hook it all up? Look, is it going to happen?
I've got a lot of patients very concerned about that because they're concerned that their privacy is going to be gone. I don't think it's really going to be a problem. I think it's going to make it better because if, in fact, your medical notes are available, it shouldn't be medical notes. It just should be some basic medical information, allergies, stuff like that. I don't know what they're going to do. No one really knows. It's all under wraps.
I would have thought it would have been really good to be able to, if you somehow end up in a hospital in a place where you're not anticipating to be and people go, oh, I want to see what the patient has in respect to priors, as in whether they're allergic to something or whether they've got a, I don't know. I just thought that would be really handy information for a doctor to have on hand.
I think what we'll need is two systems. I think we'll need, like, for example, in my practice, what I'd want is a system where I put my notes, but then there may be some sort of national formulated, because otherwise it's too much information, where you'd put the patient's name, maybe some of their illnesses, maybe the current medications, allergies. That you don't need everything. You just need some information, because if you have everything, it might just be too difficult.
Mm. It'd also stop a lot of abuse of the medical system and the Medicare system going on as well. You could say, oh, hang on a minute, you've seen three other doctors already today and you've got these prescriptions and what are you seeing me for again?
Yeah, but then you've got to start to ask yourself, is that the nanny state? And when are we, you know, are we really intruding on people's privacy? At what point do you go to that people should be allowed to do what they want to? I mean, Medicare would argue, well, while they're paying, they want to know.
Well, that's right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Look at this webcam moving around. It's very impressive.
Do you Skype or any of those voiceover IP things?
I've got a Skype. My Skype occasion. My daughter's about to go overseas to study next year, so I fully intend to Skype.
Because vision. That's where the pictures work really, really well.
Do you remember the Jetsons? I'm sorry, but this is the Jetsons.
I love the Jetsons.
I know, but this is the Jetsons. I mean, we always used to laugh when George Jetson would talk to Mr. Spacely on the telephone, phone.
Yeah.
And here it is.
Would it surprise you that Skype gained 40 million users in 3 months? That's not bad, is it?
It doesn't surprise me at all.
That's half the planet, I would have thought, who's connected.
Doesn't it also start to make you think about your bill that you're paying for your little telephone? And you know, really, if they can do Skype the way they do Skype, why are we all paying so much for telephones?
Yes, here lies the million-dollar question, really, isn't it? Dr. Ron and I have this wonderful we're both working towards the same goal, to rid ourselves of being connected to the incumbent telco, purely for that very reason, because we're paying for things that we're not using these days.
I like paying for the bills. I like paying for the fact that they don't send me a paper bill.
Oh, that's normal, isn't it?
I know. Yeah. They make you pay for an accounting fee because they don't have to send you a
bill. And you haven't been into a shop to try and pay cash, because they'll slag you for that too.
Yeah, they charge you for paying the bills as well. It doesn't matter whether you get the account electronically or not. If you're actually going to pay the bill...
You're going there with your hard-earned cash.
Because you're a customer and you have a contract with them, then they charge you to pay the bill as well. Oh, it's great. Yeah.
But where would we be without them?
Bandwidth will become free. Or it's approaching, the costs are coming down, 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 down for more and more bandwidth, and it's approaching that, like, zero. It'll never quite hit zero, but it's approaching it.
Well, I was in Europe last year, and I found it amazing because I took my little my Asus R2 with me, which was an interesting thing. But
you're a good advertisement for Asus.
I am actually, aren't I? I am. But the thing that I thought was, I've also got a Toshiba satellite, don't you worry about that. But the thing that I found amazing over there, but I have no shares in any companies, and I'd love to, free Wi-Fi everywhere.
Yeah, it's
in
great,
all
isn't
the
it?
Restaurants, yeah. In all the hotels, free Wi-Fi. But yep. Here, you know, that'll be $25.
Well, they did that in Venice. Venice, we talked about it last week on the show. Venice, free Wi-Fi right across
Paris,
Venice.
Right yep. Across Paris.
Stryker in our chat says, Foxtel make me pay $3 for getting a paper bill. Adam Turner, it says, it's because telcos like to do things that people that should only be done discussed on late-night radio shows. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
very
you,
much.
Adam. So, yeah, but I think Wi-Fi has got to be a lot going for. Like, even driving here tonight, I was having a snoop around on this new device that I've got, and there's a
not
lot
while
of.
While you were driving.
No. Well, it pops up on the screen. It's hard not to notice, and it says unsecured Wi-Fi in your wireless area,
in
and it's like just drive down the street. So there's plenty of Wi-Fi to be had out there if you really
Wi-Fi
want it.
Wi-Fi stealers.
Yes, war chalking, as they call it.
Mm.
So
it's theft. Don't do it.
It is theft, isn't it?
It is theft. Yeah. It is not.
You're not on the panel tonight, Graham. Your opinion doesn't count.
That is obviously from someone who does it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah, anyway, the other interesting thing too, peer-to-peer. I'm interested in seeing what if you've had any experience with the peer-to-peer sort of – obviously people associate that with downloading of movies and stuff like that. But, you know, the relevance of peer-to-peer in this day and age, have you done any – peer-to-peer
LimeWire.
Stuff?
LimeWire.
Yeah?
LimeWire, yeah, is a big
yeah,
one.
Yeah, I actually purchased the Pro because I thought, yeah, yep. Do the right thing. I find that that fabulous. I love it. Love my music.
Because traditionally that's where a lot of our web traffic is these days, through peer-to-peer networking. Even Canada at the moment, the main telecommunications regulator there says that they're actually going to start throttling traffic at night because they want to try and get their peer-to-peer usage down. When everyone goes off peak, everything kicks in. I think even here, one of the telcos, I'm just trying to think who it was, wasn't on it, but one of the main telcos here decided that they were going to move their off-peak hour because everyone set their peer-to-peer clients to turn on at 11 o'clock or whatever off-peak was, and they just took half the network down. So,
well, our new off-peak time with our ISP goes up to lunchtime. It's like 2 a.m. or something through to 12 p.m., I thought that's interesting, and they say that's just when it's the least used time of you're part of the network.
Not bandwidth, not that sort of thing, but with peer-to-peer, I found, in fact, I nearly freaked out because on the 22nd of October, I got the message saying, you have used 80% of your this month's allocation. And I said to my daughter, don't download anything. And the thing is, I mean, she said, why, Mum? It just, they won't cut it off. I said, no, but it'll go so slowly, I won't be able to do anything.
It's worse than being cut off.
Oh, it is.
We did it. It happened to us. We tried it once just because we wanted to see how slow it really was, and we did it about half a day before the thing kicked over into the new.
It's pretty bad.
Oh, it was like,
it's like the old days.
Like those dial-up modem noises you were making before.
Can you remember sitting there waiting for 10 minutes for a site to download? Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We did, though, and some of us still do on mobile phones.
Yes.
Oh, it's a bit like that. Now, you've obviously got a family, Sally. How do you how are they online? Do you have to
My daughter's 20 and she's got her own laptop with her own password that I don't know.
Are they responsible for their own internet or do you provide still?
No, I provide internet. In fact, she came up to me the other day and said, "So Mum, how much is Foxtel?" And I told her, "And how much is internet?" And I said, "No, I don't think you can afford to move out." because she's got a nice laptop, but she's going overseas, so I've got to get her a smaller one. I figure I might get one of those little tiny ones.
The little EE things.
Do you know, I mean, really, when you think about it, the price of these things, it's just phenomenal.
For $400, you can pick up some great stuff. And I think even the Agora ones, which is by Ruslan, I can't think of his first name at the moment, who is out of Sydney, he does some pretty amazing stuff. And they're as cheap as chips, really. Mm. And it doesn't matter. They're almost becoming disposable.
I was just going to say that, yeah. I think they're wonderful.
Nothing under the hood there. We can get and have a tweak, though. It's all, if it breaks, that's it. Just go and buy yourself another one. And what about the digital living room at your place? Are we seeing nice big tellies? Are we seeing...
Yes, I actually have... I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 televisions, which is... That's basically...
And how many people in the house?
There's 2.
Okay, good.
So that's 2 cats.
2.5 televisions per person.
That's but
I can relate to that.
No, but we've got the 55-inch plasma. That's for the Wii and for Amy to watch her DVDs on with her friends.
Yep.
And then there's the old Telefunken. I've got this old Telefunken television, 85 centimetres across from the early 90s. That is a genuine Telefunken. I've got to tell you, the picture on that is brilliant. But I've got my Optus IQ. Got to have my Optus IQ. Got to watch 45 episodes of SVU one after the other.
Optus IQ? I thought it was Foxtel. Is it Foxtel IQ?
Sorry, it's Foxtel IQ. Where am I saying?
It's about to say Optus. Same programming is it? Though.
Oh, no, Optus do own... Optus have a Foxtel. I don't know which... I actually can't remember which carrier I'm with because I keep changing.
Were you originally with Optus and then suddenly you're getting...
Was,
it's like my mum and dad, they're the same.
I went Telstra
and
then
suddenly they got an IQ and they're getting all this Foxtel badged stuff. And I said, when did you become Foxtel customers? I don't think we are. I think we're Optus or whatever.
But I get... You know what? I'd love to know if anyone on the chat site has this problem. You can't turn the magazine off. You ask them not to send you the magazine, and they won't. They keep sending it. You say, I don't want to receive the magazine because I go online and I program it. No, you have to get the magazine.
And they bill you for it.
Probably.
Yep. Do they? I'll be built in.
But don't you just love the fact that you can be anywhere in the world and you can program your IQ and program it to record the whole series?
That's good. That's a good feature.
Yeah, until they start screwing around with the times in the electronic program guide, then you miss the last bit, the imperative bit. Just before he's about to do something... It stops.
You know how on Google Books there's that thing about looking for the pages with the hands? You know about that?
Vaguely.
Yeah. Well, I found one once.
Did you?
I found a hand page. But it's a bit like I think people should look at the information, the programming information on the television, press the I button to look at on Foxtel, because I don't know who writes the stuff on these shows, but some of it is way off. It is the wrong – it's just everything's wrong. Quite frequently.
It's a frequently discussed and debated topic in here, I've got to tell you.
Sorry. Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Some of the stuff they say, it's terrible. Mm.
It is. It can be very misleading, I think, in a lot of respects. And yes. Anyway, take a break.
But we love it.
Oh, yeah. We'll come back with more after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, proudly sponsored by D-Link, building networks for people.
Before we get to the rundown this week, Dr. Ron.
Oh, yeah, it'll help keep you warm on a cold Melbourne night.
Now, they've actually been pulled off US telly.
So chances are it may be a nice marriage of technology and provider.
I'm fed up with this you're not living in the right country stuff on the internet. That's not the way the internet works.
Oh, well, you will work for the government.
Yeah. I'd be hoping they'd be refunding that pretty quick,
we're
smart.
We're in 3 meg hell, buddy.
I'm on 8 meg. 16 or 17 megabits per second.
Suck it up, princess.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
Greetings, everyone. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, Australia's wonderful technology radio show.
Yes, you are listening to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb here. Joining me this evening on the panel is two doctors, a real one and a not so real one.
Sally's a real one as well.
There you go.
I paid a lot of money for mine. I went to buy a doctorateonline.com or whatever it is. I just made that up. Don't type it in.
Ah, yeah, good. One of those spam mail things. You're the one. Anyway, you are listening to Tech Talk Radio. We've got the Oddspot gadget and website of the week coming up after this sort of stuff. We've got a little bit more to go to this evening, but joining us, obviously, is Dr. Sally. Or Dr. Feelgood, Sally Coburn. Now, your show on 3AW, what do you just talk? You don't talk tech there, do you?
Talk health.
You talk health and bodies and souls and all sorts of things.
Information, and I usually have an expert or two or three in every week. And, of course, when you came on, we were talking about cyber safety. Yep. But on the show last Sunday, we did. It was interesting because radio is a fascinating place because there's still some stuff that people think, oh, you shouldn't talk about that on radio. But I don't believe that. I think we should. And so I did a show on the consequences of prostate cancer. But it became very techie because I needed to have a warning. And, of course, to get a voiceover guy in to do the warning, that costs money. So we just downloaded a whole lot of stuff from the net, and it was fun.
It's a great resource. And then putting it all together with all the modern tools and gadgets that we've got at our disposal.
Did I had a quote from The Simpsons, a quote from American Pie, and a whole lot of computer-type voices, and it was a fun morning.
It's also a big time waster, too. I've got, by the time you sit down there and find them all and stitch them all together and do
Wave
stuff
Lab.
Like that.
I use Wavelab, which is just fabulous.
And that's tell us about Wavelab. I must admit, I haven't heard of that one before.
Wavelab is one that actually the tech guys at 3RW recommended to me.
Yeah.
And it's like Sound Blaster. Not Sound Blaster. What am I talking about? SoundForge. It's very similar to SoundForge, which are the two, SoundForge and Wavelab, the two almost professional audio editing equipment.
Yep.
Really good.
Very good. Now, talk to me a little bit. We've spoke off air before about genealogy and things like that, what you do in your spare time tech-wise and things like that. So obviously genealogy is one of the things because we've been down that with our family, but you've done it with yours as well.
Look, I love genealogy and, I'm a member online of ancestry.com.au. If you're interested in family history, ancestry.com.au is fantastic and I've been subscribing to that for many years.
Mm.
And I've traced my family back to the 1700s using that stuff. At the moment, they've just put up the electoral rolls from 1900 to 1954 in Australia. You know, you can trace your family back. You can find out where they lived, what they did, who they were living with. Oh, it's very interesting.
Which ships they came out to.
You can find that out
too.
A lot of that's free, actually. In fact, can I tell you too?
Yeah.
Birth, deaths and marriages in Victoria, you can go there and if you go to a public library and look in one of the genealogy software indexes where you can look up your ancestors and you can get the registration number from the index. You can go online to the Birth, Deaths and Marriages, pay about $17.50, and you can get a PDF emailed to you of their death certificate, birth certificate, marriage certificate.
Pretty amazing, isn't it?
Look, it is, but only the historical ones. If you want to get one more recent.
Oh, current one, a real person.
Can't get a real person, to get dead people. But up to 1985, though, deaths up to 1985.
Yeah.
So, and I would say from a family health perspective, I've had a few patients come in and say, I really don't know what dad or granddad died of. They've been able to get the death certificate, found out they died of bowel cancer, go on and have the test. It really makes a difference.
That's good, isn't it? There's a positive coming out of some of this genealogy and technology joining all together. It's going to be great in a few years' time, isn't it?
And of course, I think it's familysearch.org is the fabulous website where it's free. It's got a lot of the transcribed parish registers put up there by the Mormons. Fabulous work they've done. Brilliant work.
Any other great pastimes on the net that you do?
Love on the net.
Yeah, well, you gave me one of these things to go and Google before.
I did my own website, but as was pointed out by Warlock Online, that it hasn't been updated for quite some time.
March 2008.
Well, 2008. Yeah, I just got a bit busy. But the 3AW, we put our podcasts up of the show on 3AW. Yep. But I did that website using Expressions, and prior to that I used FrontPage. So, you know, it was pretty – I believe it's got a lot of excess HTML behind it, but hey.
Now, one thing I was going to ask you too, with all the – do-it-yourself medical sort of things which are becoming online, because the internet's becoming a real resource for, you know, every ill, scratch, itch, whatever you might happen to have. Is that doing more harm than good, or is it good because people can research and then come and see a GP and say, oh, look, I think.
Can I tell you one of the greatest things I find is I will have a patient there, and one today I remember she had a sore shoulder, and I said, right, look, I can show you what muscle that is. I went to Google Images and I put in trapezius. Bing, up come all these fantastic diagrams. I can say, see that? That's what's wrong with you. I can also, I often say to patients, let's go and talk to Dr. Google. And so we go online. And of course, another time I bring up Wikipedia and they go, but that's Wikipedia. I go, yeah, but see, I know how to use it, and I have a look there first. And then we'll go and look somewhere else.
Yep.
Look, I think it's fabulous. I think the trouble, of course, being that unless you know where to go for good information on health, you're going to find yourself scared witless by some of the stuff you're going to see.
Yep.
So some of the stuff that, of course, Better Health Channel that the state government puts up is a really good start in Victoria. But, of course, and anyone from overseas can go there too. Most countries, and in fact, some of the American government websites are fantastic. The CDC website over there is brilliant. So, yeah, look, I think it's a good thing overall.
Okay, so we're sort of starting to see, I know that my wife in particular, if the kids get something that she doesn't know what it is, she'll hit the internet straight away and go and try and research it. And then,
they've all got leukemia.
Yeah, exactly, and there's always this fatal, that's so true,
I know.
But where do you start? I wouldn't even know where to start doing that.
That's why, as a doctor, I'd prefer people to, you know, okay, do that, but please come and talk to me before you instigate any treatment.
I'm probably like a typical Australian, you know, 30-something-year-old male where I just say, oh, I go to a doctor once every 4 or 5 years, maybe something. If I'm on my deathbed and I can't breathe and there's blood getting coughed up and
bad,
then I might consider going to the doctor.
I would like to see you consider having your cholesterol tested when you're, you know, sort of 30 and just know what you're in for. Talk about your risk factors.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, some of this stuff that's up there now, for example, talking about prostate, just...
Very topical at the moment,
isn't it? It is, because Movember's coming up.
Oh, glad you've brought that up.
Movember.
Do tell.
You've got to grow a mo to raise money.
You in?
I think you're in.
A Tech Talk team.
Okay. Tech Talk team.
Tech Talk team for Movember.
Okay. Yep. Grow
a mo. I did it a couple of years ago. Remember Mark Diggins had a go at me?
And
And you raise money for Prostate Cancer Foundation and also for Beyond Blue, the depression group.
Yeah.
And really worth doing. But what I love about this is it's men's health is being brought out into the open, something you just don't usually talk about.
Yes,
but now
listen up, you boys out there, because they're predominantly boys, I'd say, be listening. But, yeah, didn't they bring the prostate cancer check down? It used to be 50, and now they're recommending 45 to now 40,
look,
I think, isn't it?
That's a very controversial area, which I could launch into if you want me to, but I think that's a whole nother
different
show.
Different radio show, yeah.
That's a whole nother show. But the sort of thing is I tend to take the attitude of it's better the devil you know than the devil you don't, but you should discuss with your doctor. Just don't go and blindly have a test. Talk to your doctor about what it means, how to do it, and whether you should.
Okay, very good. All right, back to technology then.
Back to tech.
So what are you going to do in the next little bit? You're happy with the BlackBerry? You haven't been tempted to the dark side or anything else? No,
I love it.
Have you played with an Apple iPhone?
Nope.
You haven't?
Don't want to.
Do you want to?
No.
Do you want to touch one?
No.
Do you want to just have a look at one from a distance?
No.
Okay.
No. I like
she sounds like I used
because,
to be.
But I bought a. Can I tell you about the absolutely fabulous piece of equipment that I bought 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, is this a gadget?
This is a gadget. Oh, we're not up to gadget yet?
No,
we won't talk about gadget.
We might wait for the gadget, but yeah.
Look. No, we'll wait for the gadget. That was just a teaser.
Oh, yeah.
That was a teaser for the
exactly.
gadget.
Exactly. Yeah, all right. Now, as I was going to say, any new tech? What's on the wish list? Have you got, obviously, you've got enough televisions. The Blu-ray, have you gone down the Blu-ray side of things
now, that
yet?
Is the next thing, but I'm waiting for them to come down in price, as everybody is. Can't see the point until it is. And also, you know, people go and buy these Blu-ray players, but they don't have a Blu-ray recorder. So they sort of, it's silly. And you'll convert a DVD into Blu-ray. What a waste
of time. Doesn't
work. What a waste of time. So until you've got the whole scheme, either you're going to get the Blu-ray disc to put in there, or you're going to have the Blu-ray recorder to make them, why bother having a Blu-ray?
Mm.
So I'm waiting.
It's a valid point. Yeah.
Like Adam
too
said
dear
a few
days.
Years ago, it's like the first guy that ever owned a fax machine.
Who was
said,
he
well,
fax?
This is pretty good. Now what do I do?
John, I am so over people saying to me, what's your fax number? I said, I threw out my fax machine about
good
10
on
years
you,
ago.
Sally.
I don't have a fax. Don't talk to me about
I think
about
we should have an
email.
International fax destruction day. I think
I totally
you've got Movember.
Agree.
We just get rid of these things.
Don't need them. PDF,
so
email.
Pleased to hear you say that. Electronic is the way to go, isn't
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. Like, easy storage. Everything is neat and tidy. Mm. Mind you, I use more paper than I ever did.
Well, we seem to,
it's
don't
funny
we?
The
we
paperless to. World never really became paperless, didn't it? We're still all very green and not.
No.
We print out. And even, I love the way people put on the bottom of their emails, please consider this email before printing or whatever it is that they put on there. And you go, yeah, right, sure. When they
do you find that sometimes you print emails and the actual body of the email is on page one, but then there's page 2, 3, and 4 with this information might
exactly.
be protected. And yeah, please consider the environment you're printing this out. And
but I always have my computer. Now, here you are. My printer is always, of default, is duplex. So it will always print the other side. So
yep.
I always have page 1 and 2.
That's good.
Saving
that's
paper.
Very good. So you're using half the paper that everyone else
that's
is.
That's correct.
That's good. I don't know how people, when people email me, it's amazing. They always just put that extra line, whatever it is, on the bottom of the email, which causes it to go to 2 pages.
That's someone's law. We could call that Andrew's law.
It could. But in solution to that, I just grab it out and stick it back on top of the printer on the other side.
Excuse me. I've got a world-shattering piece of news. This has never happened to anyone I know ever before. My daughter's computer decided to arc up the other day and die, and I said, did you check the warranty? She goes, oh, no, but it'll still be in warranty. I said, nothing's ever in warranty when it dies. It's still in warranty.
Is it really?
Her computer died in warranty. Thank you very much. Has anyone ever had that experience?
Is that an out-of-the-box warranty or an extended warranty that she purchased?
It was out-of-the-box warranty.
That's pretty rare.
Oh.
That's good, yeah.
Except it might be the battery, and I doubt that they'll cover the battery.
I don't know.
They were very nice, and I'm going to go back there. But that's never happened to me before. The other thing is I lost the charger to my video camera. Rule number one, if you lose a charger to your video camera, you will go to the store and buy a new one, and when you come home, you will find the old one. But I went to the store, and they didn't have it in stock, came home, and found it.
It's a bit like your wallet. When you lose your wallet and you go and replace everything and tell everyone, then you find it.
Exactly.
like losing the TV remote control. If you lose that, you might as well just throw out the TV and buy a new one, because it's going to charge you through the nose to replace the remote.
Well, you can go and buy these all-in-one things.
The universal remotes.
They're pretty good.
Don't you need to program them with the original one, though? Or?
No, not these days. I know that the Logitech ones, the whiz bang, Adam will know what they are, the ones that you push one button and the TV comes on,
the curtains close.
That's the ones.
Yeah.
You plug them into your laptop via USB and you program them online. It says what appliances do you have, and it then puts all the codes down straight off your USB into your remote control, so you don't have to do what you say, which theoretically is really good until you lose your login, like I have with mine. It's all too hard.
So you can't log into your remote control anymore.
I can't log into my remote.
The world's gone
sad,
mad.
Isn't it? Has it? Really?
This is crazy.
Oh, well, there you go. All right, you are listening to Tech Talk Radio. We might go to our final break for the show this evening. We've got Dr. Ron and Sally Coburn in this evening talking all sorts of things tech at the moment. You might remember Sally. If you go, who's that voice? Where's she from? Pillow Talk back in the 90s, wasn't it? 92, 93?
Think bedtime, Sunday night. 92 to 98. Think the
6 years.
Think the Walkman in your ears.
That's Walkman.
Walkman in your ears.
Andrew and I were saying last week we used to be, well, not Andrew and I together, but independently, we'd be driving home and we'd sit out in the driveway of our house and we'd be listening to to your program, and we'd say, we can't go in yet, but
people
still on.
Absolutely.
I get on planes and airline flight attendants and say to me, I hate you because I can never get home because I sit there listening to the next caller.
But doesn't it go to show how relevant it was at the time to everyone's lifestyle?
And can I say, I absolutely promise to you, it was all absolutely genuine. Those callers were just as they came, and I've never, we had to switch the call taking off and then flick it on at 10. Bing! It was completely full and it stayed full the whole time.
Isn't that amazing? We've never done talkback radio in here.
No, thank goodness.
No.
It's fun. I love talking about that.
All right, we'll trundle down the road to 3AW and do it down there. All right, back with more in a moment. Oddspot and Gadget and website after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, proudly sponsored by D-Link, building networks for people.
Suffering succotash, this has to be the best technology show on the internet, Tech Talk Radio.
The 43-year-old claims he was looking for evidence of UFOs and aliens.
Well, did NASA get hacked as well?
Yeah, absolutely. No,
really?
If you need high speed and high quality at the same time, you need a much more powerful transmitter.
It automatically offered me the latest Optus configuration file.
How long did they take to get back to you? And how did they get back to you?
By the time you finished your cheeseburger, it was too hard and you drove away.
That's right.
Somebody else in the world will have had the same problem.
Latitude's everything to me. Yeah. I like knowing Dr. Ron is at any particular hour of the day. Or my wife, for that matter. But they're both of them together.
Hang on a minute. What does that mean?
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Cool! This thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Our guest this evening, Sally Coburn, has the Gadget of the Week. She was shopping the other day and spent way, way too much money on this.
I did. It's a Janome 11,000 embroidery sewing machine. Now, you might think, what's that got to do with tech? But my
what's
God.
What's that got to do with technology?
Got, yeah, exactly. It's got a touchscreen computer on a board. It will do hundreds of thousands of stitches. But not only that, I bought the software, incredibly expensive software, that allows me to take anything, I mean anything, and turn it into an embroidery stitch. And I put the fabric in there, I press a button, and it sews it. It just does. It even threads the needle itself.
Technology is killing craft in this country, globally, really.
Nano meets nano. It's just amazing.
So it's a sewing machine which what, the scanner attached to it? You plug it into
USB?
No, it
hasn't got a scanner. It's got a USB. It comes with its own USB.
Oh, that's what I like.
And you connect it to your PC, and then you do all this sort of designing of the embroidery on the PC, and then you press this button and it converts it into a .jeff file, which I'd so love to find a hack for. Oh, no, I didn't say that.
A .jeff file.
A .jeff file, as in, yes. Anyway, I think the state of Victoria had one of those once. Anyway, you...
yes.
yes. And so what happens then is it sends the information, and this .jeff file has all the stitches in it, and it just sews this beautiful picture. Like, I could take a photograph of you, digitise it, and make the Andrew T-shirt.
So do you have to change the cotton or does that do it for
you? No. It says change the cotton now. It actually says this. It says this will take 23 minutes. And then it says change to blue cotton now, change to red cotton now. But you press this button, it threads its own needle. I tell you, this is the tech machine.
Can somebody who's not a seamstress, person who sews, can someone who's never used one of these gadgets, can they use them or anything like that or not?
Yes, I would imagine you could. Yeah? It's a matter of holding the piece of fabric still and pressing the button.
And what are they worth, should I ask?
Well, the current going rate for the new ones is about $8,000 to $9,000. But I got the...
And we thought our gadgets were bad.
But I got the run-out model. Like, they've got the new upgraded one, so I got the one without the upgrade, which means I can only do 953 stitches, not 957 or something like that. And I got that for $4,800.
Fantastic. There you go. Tech Talk Radio's sewing gadget of the week.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
Alrighty, I have you a website of the week. How many times have you been trying to find a font? Well, there's a photographer in the studio now.
A font?
I don't. A font. You know when you see a font and you go, "What on earth is that font?" And I need it for my typing. I want to type and use it on my letterhead, my whatever it is like that.
If I don't have them anymore in the computer, I really go looking for fonts these days. But
really,
have you found somewhere to get good fonts from?
Yeah, if you can actually Google this if you want to, but you can go, "What the font?
What the?"
It's easy to remember. What the font? And if you Google it, it'll take you to new.myfonts.com. And what you can do is you can actually grab a bit of image of the font and you upload it as a JPEG to
that's like detection of the font.
It'll hopefully tell you through its mega database what the font is. And
that's
clever. Isn't that not a bad idea for it's just what you need when you go, "Oh, there's this really great font. I have no idea what it is, but I want it." What the font? Just remember that and you can Google it. And that's probably one of the best time-saving devices I've come across in a long time. The Tech Talk Radio, what's that, the website of the week?
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Don't ask! For God's sakes, don't ask!
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Warlock, yes, the Catholic Church does have fonts, but you're on the wrong
different
track
sorts
there.
Of fonts.
I haven't been watching the chat.
Don't watch it. A 17-year-old boy in the United States has been charged with a misdemeanor after police said he put tomato sauce on his arms and faked his own suicide on a live video website.
Oh, he didn't get out of a balloon recently, did he?
This is bizarre.
What's going on
over there? New York State Police say troopers got several calls last week about a young man broadcasting a suicide attempt over the internet. Captain Steve Natrelli said the calls came from as far away as Israel, where the website was hosted. They traced the computer address to a home in the Buffalo suburb of Clarence in New York State. The officer said the teen admitted the hoax and insisted it was just a joke. He was charged with one third-degree count of falsely reporting an incident and is due to appear in town court this week. On the 29th of October.
Well, it must be something in the water
bizarre.
Over there,
sure. Yeah, so that is an odd spot. And there's a note here, of course, what can I say? Police have withheld his name because of his age. Yeah, there
absolutely.
We go. Odd spot, Andrew.
Thank you, Dr. Ron. Thank you. Off you go.
We have a small presentation to make. Dr. Feelgood, Sally, thank you very much for coming
in.
You've got your very own Tech Talk Radio coffee mug now.
I love that.
Thank you very much for being our guest tonight.
Thank you so much.
Wonderful having you in here.
We've done our timeshare. We'll go back to 3RW next time. We'll do it again another.
And it's been fabulous to see all the people in the chat side, and I'm still talking to them.
There you go. Well, once again, thank you very much, Sally, for coming in and joining us this evening. It's been wonderful.
My pleasure.
I love having we don't normally get too many girls in here talking about tech.
That are so passionate about the hobby.
What is it about?
We're hanging out with the wrong crowd,
obviously.
What's
with my sisters?
Absolutely. Hey, thank you very much for coming in. Thanks,
everyone.
Thanks for everyone contributing on the chat tonight, too. It's been a wonderful night tonight. We're going to do the same next week. We've been chatting to all sorts of people. Kelly from... I'll talk about it next
Microsoft?
Time.
Microsoft?
No, not Microsoft. From an image company. We're going to talk about how to search for images and stuff like that online.
Terrific.
Anyway, thank you, D-Link, for sponsoring us again. D-Link, go and check out via our website. Click the links. Guys, it's all good for everyone.
Click, clicking, and going.
Look after some D-Link stuff for you. And once again, we'll be back same time next week. So it's until then, bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT, and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Justin Dunlop, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications, podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia that take the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9818 2756 or visit our website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.